You're listening to On Subrogation, the litigation podcast about how to recover your damages from the people who caused them. We are your hosts. I'm Rebecca Wright.
And I'm Steve Alsip, and we are both partners at Rathbone Group and experienced civil litigators.
During our podcast, if you have questions or comments, please feel free to reach out to us at podcast@rathbonegroup.com.
And visit our website, www.rathbonegroup.com. So, Rebecca.
Yes, Steve.
Here's a story. One time when I was in high school, my friend Nate was driving a vehicle. This was in a 1989 Mercury Tracer.
Nice.
If you remember what those look like. It's a perfect high school vehicle for a person our age. We're driving down the road, probably 35 miles an hour or so. I'm not paying any attention, probably doing CDs or whatever it is you do when you're in 1996. And at one point, my friend who is driving suddenly starts flipping out, and the car goes forward onto its front two wheels.
Oh, my gosh.
And stops dead in the road, and we went into the opposing lane a little bit. What had happened was, we're driving down the road, and suddenly Nate, who I should add here is deathly afraid of spiders, which I get it, sees a spider on his leg and starts flipping out. And as he's flipping out with his arms and legs going every which direction, he knocks the car into reverse.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a front-wheel drive car, so he knocks it into reverse while we're going 30 miles an hour down the road.
So you're stopped dead because he no longer has a transmission.
Right. Everything went kaflooey there for a second. The car did start back up again, but I don't think it ever ran exactly right after that. We didn't hit anybody else. There was no collision. We did go into the oncoming lane, but nothing catastrophic happened, which it absolutely could have at the time. My question to you is, can we sue the spider? I'm just joking. The question is,
I don't think the spider has any assets is the problem.
Frankly, I never saw the spider, so I don't know that it actually existed. He swears this is what happened. I have no reason to doubt him, because otherwise, why would you act completely abnormally?
It's the old phantom spider defense.
The phantom spider defense is not going to hold. Now, my question to you is this a sudden emergency?
Right. So really, is Nate liable for the damages that happened in the collision? Let's say that you had been injured, mm-hmm. or let's say that he had hit another vehicle.
Yes.
Would your friend Nate have been liable for that? And when we start with the basic concept of motor vehicle laws in the United States, the basics are that every operator of a motor vehicle is responsible for keeping his vehicle under control and on his side of the road and following the traffic laws.
Yeah.
So when Nate stopped dead in the road when he went into oncoming traffic, he violated the traffic ordinances. Mm-hmm. And so as a general matter, he would be adjudged to be negligent. He would be adjudged to be liable for any resulting damages. However, he would have potentially had an affirmative defense available called the sudden emergency doctrine.
That's true. And in the sudden emergency doctrine, if you're going to use the defense, one of the things you have to do is you have to prove that the sudden and unforeseeable emergency made compliance with the law impossible. And that would be his argument, that it is impossible to stay within the traffic laws of the state of Ohio with a spider on your leg.
How could anybody do that? So the sudden emergency doctrine is an affirmative defense. And what that means is that the defendant, so in this case your friend Nate, mm-hmm. has said, you know, I did go left of center, I did throw it into reverse while going 30 miles an hour, or whatever the case may be, whatever the action is that violated the ordinances or the negligent act, I did those things. But there's a reason that I did them, and the reason is going to absolve me of liability.
Right.
So the plaintiff has already proven their case. If Nate had hit another vehicle, mm-hmm. then that other vehicle likely would have brought some sort of action against him, and that would have been the plaintiff. So they've already proven their case. They proved that Nate caused this collision. And Nate is going to say, that's true, but now I'm going to prove something that will essentially get me out of the liability.
Just kind of a reminder as to negligence, you need a duty, a breach of that duty, causation, and damages. In this case, the duty would be to stay on your side of the road, or mm-hmm. a duty to operate your vehicle in a way that doesn't cause harm to others. Breach of that duty would be the violation of that ordinance to stay on your side of the road. Causation and damages would be the rest of that equation. what we're saying here is that the sudden emergency doctrine would be basically not negligence, because your duty would be removed.
Well, you are still negligent, but you did operate your vehicle within the standard of care of an ordinary person under the circumstances of the sudden emergency.
Sure.
The point is that once the plaintiff proves the basic argument as to negligence, then the burden of proof will shift to the defendant, and the defendant has to prove that it was a sudden emergency that caused him to act this way. And so the question is, what constitutes a sudden emergency?
It's a little bit different in each state. Generally, there are two elements that must be satisfied before the sudden emergency doctrine will apply. Number one, that there was an emergency situation that requires immediate action to avoid injury. Number two, the emergency must not have been created by the negligence of the party seeking the protection of the emergency, the sudden emergency doctrine. So you can't cause your own emergency and then rely on that emergency to absolve you of negligence.
That's right. And sort of part of that second piece is the foreseeability question. So if the emergency was foreseeable, then it may not constitute a sudden emergency. And then you mentioned the timing. It has to be sudden. So courts have made different determinations about this. But in general, we're talking about no chance for deliberation, no time to think about what to do. If you have 10 seconds to make a decision, then it's probably not going to be a sudden emergency.
And this makes sense if you think about the foreseeability aspect, in as much as if it's even remotely foreseeable that something's going to happen, then as you're conducting your business as a private citizen, if you're driving down the road and it's somewhat foreseeable that X event is going to happen, you should be conducting yourself as if that might happen. So one of the things we're going to get into is that if your sudden emergency is that you're sliding on ice and it's an icy day, you may not be able to use that as your defense, because if it's an icy day, you should be driving as if you could slide at any time.
And you know what's interesting is that depending on the jurisdiction, icy roads may or may not constitute a sudden emergency. Mm-hmm. So there is a case in Ohio that says that, you know what, skidding on wet or icy roads is not a sudden emergency because it is within the power of the driver to prevent that slide. Mm-hmm. You should be driving more slowly and more carefully and avoid it.
Bad road conditions are foreseeable, and it's not out of the ordinary to hit a patch of ice.
That's right. And even black ice, Ohio courts have found that black ice does not constitute a sudden emergency. However, there is one case I found in Ohio where they did find that hitting the patch of ice was part of a sudden emergency. And that was an interesting case where the driver was driving, crested a hill, and it was nighttime. It was dark outside. And someone stepped across the center line of the roadway into the defendant's lane of travel while waving a flashlight.
Okay.
This caused the defendant to throw on the brakes, and she hit a patch of black ice, and her car skidded into some parked vehicles which did not have lights on. And so the court said, all right, that's a sudden emergency. But I think it had more to do with the pedestrian with the flashlight coming into her lane of travel than it did with the black ice.
Yeah.
But you can compare that to the Commonwealth of Kentucky, just south of Ohio, where black ice is considered to be a sudden emergency. And I don't think that's a big surprise when you have jurisdictions that have lots of ice and snowy conditions that say, you know what, you should be prepared for this, versus jurisdictions that don't have that condition so often, who may consider it to be less expected.
So you were talking about a vastly different geographical area between, say, Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, Ohio, and
Warren County, Kentucky, way down in the south.
Or Whitley County down by Tennessee in Kentucky,
right,
where, you know, you hardly ever have these conditions.
That's right. That's right. So that goes to that question of foreseeability. And when you mentioned that drivers cannot be the cause of their own sudden emergency, that's where you get into the driver's own conduct undoing the sudden emergency defense. And so courts have found that if a driver was speeding, driving too fast for the conditions, driving while distracted, like eating foods, driving in the dark without headlights, or driving without prescribed eyeglasses, for example, that those are all ways that the sudden emergency defense can be undone, that in those cases the driver's
really contributed to the emergency situation. If you are doing 100 miles an hour, then yeah, you're not going to have time to stop for a car that is, you know, disabled by the side of the road.
Correct. And one of the other reasons that we get into, I see more often than not, is when a person loses consciousness. If you lose consciousness due to an unforeseen medical condition that you may have, and this is your first time experiencing it while you're driving, that's super unfortunate. If you lose consciousness because you've been drinking all day, that's a different story, and that would be something that you brought on through your own conduct.
That's absolutely right. So let's talk about another common case of sudden emergency, animals in the road. Mm-hmm. So animals, people run out into the road sometimes, and sometimes people try to argue that this is a sudden emergency. And so if something happened, they swerve to try to avoid the animal, then they should not be liable for the damages that are caused by their swerving, losing control of their vehicle. And this actually came up in a recent case from the Ohio Supreme Court. This decision was just entered in June of 2018, so, you know, hot off the presses. Mm-hmm. And in that case, the defendant was moving from North Carolina to Northern Ohio. He had rented a moving truck and was coming up the highway. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and he's traveling on the interstate. He states he was going about 70 miles per hour. I never believe anybody when they say how fast they were going. But he...
Do you say that because they don't know, or do you say that because people are lying liars who lie?
Second one.
Okay.
But the defendant testified that this rental truck actually had a monitor on it, a regulator that prevented it from exceeding 70 miles per hour. So the court did accept that explanation. So he's going 70 miles an hour on the interstate. That was the speed limit where he was. And it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly he sees a deer running across the road. So he swerved to avoid it, went off the road, and flipped the truck. The trial court, and this is Noble County Court in Northern Ohio, and so it's a rural area. The trial court found that, quote, a wild animal crossing the road in a rural area of Ohio is foreseeable and therefore cannot constitute a sudden emergency. In other words, you're up here in the middle of nowhere. You should be watching out to see if stuff is going to run across the road. And, you know, you're making a face at me, but...
I don't like this at all.
But we know when it's deer season down here that there, you know, you have the potential for deer to run across. There's a particular stretch of road between my kids' school and our house. And when I'm coming home at dusk with the kids, I know to take it slow through that stretch of the road because there are woods on either side and we often see deer there.
Sure.
So the Noble County Court found that there was no reason to give a sudden emergency jury instruction, and the court refused to give the instruction. But not to fear, Steve, because the Ohio Supreme Court came in and overturned that decision. The court specifically said that the mere fact that it is foreseeable that a deer may cross a freeway at some point in time in rural Ohio does not mean a deer running across the road at a certain time or place is foreseeable and can never be a sudden emergency.
Thank you. Okay. I feel a lot better now.
Right. So, yes, deer may run across the road, but you don't have to always be driving on edge as if a deer may run across the road.
Yeah, because if that were the ruling, you would have to be going about 10 miles an hour everywhere you went.
Right.
In some of these places.
And that's when foreseeability becomes really important, right? Because as I mentioned, I've got a stretch on my way home where we know that deer run across the road during certain times of year. So me driving through that stretch is very different from, say, my sister from California driving through that stretch, right? She doesn't necessarily know that the deer may run across. And I haven't seen this argument in these cases yet, but I could imagine somebody making it. And especially in this case that we're talking about here that the Ohio Supreme Court just ruled on, here you have a defendant who's not from the area. He's driving from North Carolina, moving to the area. And so he may not be expected to foresee the possibility of deer running across the road at that particular point. So that's what the court found there. Now, if you have an area with a deer crossing sign or moose crossing in Minnesota or wherever the case may be, maybe your responsibility is different.
Maybe you should take a little bit more precaution. I think the posted speed limit sign and the careful there are moose around signs are going to conflict there. But it's, between the two of them, you should be able to conduct yourself in a way that is reasonable. And it's all going to depend on how much clearance the moose gives you before it starts wandering in front of your car. If it runs right out in front of your car, there's not a lot you can do with that or any other, you know, sudden obstruction right in front of you.
Right, right. And that's very different from the case of the moose standing in the roadway.
Yeah.
Because as you come upon it, you, if you're going a regular speed limit,
you'll notice that the sun is blocked out and you can't see anything because a giant land mammal
is standing there in your way.
So what's another example here of a sudden emergency? I mentioned earlier that losing consciousness from an unforeseen cause comes up again. And there are other doctrines that actually kind of bleed into or overlap the sudden emergency defense. And there are sudden medical emergency defenses, too, which some jurisdictions are call these separate and apart from just a regular emergency. Other jurisdictions kind of let the two bleed together. A sudden emergency can be, as we mentioned, a deer in the road. A sudden emergency could also be a heart attack, and those are the same thing. In the case of Simpson versus Rood, this is a Vermont Supreme Court case, the court recognizes that a sudden unforeseen medical event that causes the loss of consciousness could be found by a jury to be an excuse for negligence. In that case, the defendant's expert testified that the defendant had suffered from a bout of coughing that caused the defendant to lose consciousness. And then the defendant lost consciousness. His car went across the center line and hit the plaintiff's vehicle. According to the defendant, he remembers taking a sip of coffee, coughing, and then waking up after the collision. This is all the testimony that he has, but he did have a medical expert say that this is what he believed happened. He was coughing, and he lost consciousness. The plaintiff has an expert in this case who says that the defendant probably fell asleep, and it's up to the jury as to who they're going to believe there. The issue was tried to the jury. They found for the defendant. They believed the defendant's expert over the plaintiff's, and the court went ahead and said that was a fine jury instruction and a fine result. And I note this case in particular because you've had a coughing defendant case yourself.
Actually, it was our partner, Mark, had a coughing defendant case who was a truck driver driving down the road. And he had testified that he had a cough and he had purchased a Mountain Dew. I don't know why I remember this Mountain Dew so well, but he purchased a Mountain Dew because he had had this cough. And then he was drinking the Mountain Dew as he's driving the semi down the road. And as in your case, he has a coughing fit and whether the Mountain Dew went down the wrong pipe or whatever, in that case, we were arguing that there was foreseeability because he had purchased the Mountain Dew because of the cough, because he had had these recurrent coughing fits. And there was no testimony that the coughing fit made him pass out in that circumstance either.
So he's in poor health. And he's drinking Mountain Dew.
Did he contribute to? No. I'm not trying to disparage Mountain Dew. I know many college students who would never have made it through without it. So I will not cast aspersions on the Mountain Dew drinkers of America. But what I will say is that in that case, it was an issue of the foreseeability because he knew that he had this coughing condition at the time. He evidenced his knowledge of it by purchasing the drink to try to help with the coughing condition and then tried to argue that the coughing condition later created a sudden emergency that caused him to go off the road. It's similar to the cases that I've had of somebody who claims that they have a seizure while they are driving. And the first thing that you always have to do is you have to get the medical records and find out, do they have a history of seizures?
Exactly. That would again speak to the foreseeability. And the takeaway here is that if you have a person who has regular seizures, it might not be the best case for them to drive without taking a medication or something like that would prevent the seizures.
Well, and even with seizure medication in many jurisdictions, including the ones here where we live, if you have a seizure disorder, you have to be 12 months seizure-free in order to even have a driver's license. And that's a recognition by the legislature that the seizures can create these emergencies, in layman's terms, sudden emergencies, but because of their foreseeability, they would not constitute a defense to the action.
Right, and if you were lived in a jurisdiction that didn't have that distinction written out on paper, my guess is that you would, you know, you have your driver's license, but also the sudden emergency defense is not available to you in the event that you have a seizure and it causes an accident. I've had several cases where folks have had seizure incidents and have gone off the road and hit houses or other property. And it's going to depend on whether or not this is something that's known to them as a possibility that's going to happen.
And this issue of whether or not this constitutes a defense, it's really going to be up to the judge or the jury, whoever the finder of fact is, because what we're saying is you're going to get a sudden emergency instruction, perhaps, depending on the jurisdiction, but the judge or the jury, the finder of fact, gets to determine whether or not this was foreseeable, whether or not the defendant contributed to it by his or her own conduct. So in the case of the seizures, it is possible that the person has a seizure-producing medical condition, and they have had seizures in the past, but maybe it's been 6 years since they've had a seizure. So is the seizure that causes this collision in that case 6 years later foreseeable?
Yeah, and you just basically, the jury would be weighing out each side's argument.
That's right.
So in another case that deals with a sudden medical emergency, this time out of Michigan, the court does a good job of weighing whether or not this is a totally unexpected or sudden emergency. In this case, this is White versus Taylor Distributing Company. In this case, a truck driver had rear-ended another vehicle. The truck driver claimed to have suffered a syncopal episode. This is he passed out before the impact, and he could not remember the events preceding the collision. The court agreed that the sudden blackout could rebut the statutory presumption of negligence, but stated that the sudden emergency must be totally unexpected. And in this case, the defendant had admitted previously that he was feeling ill and had suffered a severe bout of diarrhea just prior to the accident. The court questioned whether any emergency was totally unexpected in this case, and therefore it wasn't sudden. This wouldn't be a sudden emergency, and it's a sudden emergency doctrine. Court states, if the defendant felt dizzy a couple of minutes before blacking out, then perhaps his subsequent emergency was not clearly sudden under the circumstances. Further, for the sudden emergency doctrine to apply, the emergency must not be of the defendant's own making. If the defendant was aware that he was not feeling well when he left the rest area but continued driving anyway because he did not have far to go, or if the defendant felt ill while driving from the rest area, or if the defendant felt ill for even a few minutes before he collided with the plaintiff, then the emergency may well have been of his own making. So that's another thing that we would have to consider. This is not a medical condition that is necessarily unexpected. He was feeling sick all day.
Right. Well, and it's the suddenness of it that the court is really calling into question there, that you can't feel dizzy for a few minutes and then pass out. Mm-hmm. You have that few minutes to make the decision to pull over.
Yeah, you get yourself a Mountain Dew.
Try not to cough.
You don't cough too much. But no, this is just something to think about. If you're feeling bad while you're driving, the best course of action is to not drive any further if you can help it.
Yeah, that's a little PSA. Is really the point of all of these cases is if you feel bad and you feel like you cannot keep control of your vehicle, pull over. Whether that's tiredness or illness or some mitigating condition, pull over. There's another interesting case regarding a sudden medical emergency where the sudden medical emergency wasn't actually discovered until after the fact. It's a case from Iowa. And in this case, Mrs. Schmidt was aged 75, and she had never had a car accident before in her entire life. And she was coming home from the grocery store wearing her trifocal glasses, and she is approaching an intersection. And as she approaches the intersection, she sees that the light is red. And so she pulls up to the intersection, preparing to stop at the intersection. Mm-hmm. And she plows into the back of a pickup truck that was stopped at the intersection. She testified in court that she saw the light was red and didn't see the pickup truck. The collision was so serious. It was such a big impact that she actually totaled the pickup truck with her sedan. That's how hard she hit it. And afterwards, she was taken to the emergency room. And the hospital, she's laying in the emergency room in the hospital. And about an hour after she got to the hospital, she realizes that she cannot see someone who's speaking to her. The doctors perform a CT scan and discover that she has lost her vision on the left side of each eye due to a left homonymous hemianopsia.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, right? And so what the doctors determined is that this was the result of a stroke. Her doctors testified at the trial that it is likely that the stroke occurred before the collision, but they could not be 100% certain that that happened. So it did explain the fact that she was able to see the red light, but not able to see the truck at the intersection.
She's got a floating blind spot in her vision at all times, or is it come and go?
It was as a result of this stroke that likely happened right before the collision, lost the left side of her vision in both eyes permanently.
Well, there's a new thing to be terrified of.
Right. So the plaintiff, as you might imagine, was not in favor of the sudden emergency instruction, said, you know, she clearly stated that she could see this red light. The doctors could not testify that they were 100% certain that the stroke even happened before the collision. She didn't even realize that she had this blindness until an hour after she got to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. The Iowa Supreme Court found that there was enough evidence to support the jury instruction of sudden emergency, that it was possible and likely, according to the doctors, that the stroke happened right before the accident occurred. And so the fact that the jury relied on that sudden emergency instruction and found Schmidt not to be liable was reasonable. So the Iowa court upheld that decision. So there's the situation where the actual events were potentially sudden, although there's no definitive evidence of that. It's an emergency in that she could not see the obstruction in front of her, although at the time she did not even realize that it was a sudden emergency that had happened.
Mm-hmm. So it would almost be in the same kind of vein as the cases where you pass out entirely.
Right.
She's
totally unaware.
Not to be glib about it, but she's blind to whatever's happening in front of her.
That
same as a person who's asleep.
Yes.
Thank you.
That was fantastic. So you can see that these cases are very, very fact specific. There are other cases that tend to come up pretty often with regard to sudden emergencies beyond icy roads, beyond animals, beyond sudden medical emergencies. And that is, I know you've heard it too, Steve, a car suddenly swerved in front of me.
You know, a phantom vehicle? The phantom vehicles is a podcast unto itself, but in cases that I have currently, this seems to be used a lot in the sudden emergency. There was a third vehicle. He didn't stop after the collision happened, but he cut me off. I took all these crazy actions to evade that vehicle and wound up hitting your insured.
Right. Yeah. Well, and so sometimes these cars suddenly turning in front of you do constitute a sudden emergency. I point to an Arizona case that in which the Arizona Supreme Court confirmed a ruling. In this case, the driver, Knutson, was driving down the road when another driver pulled out of a shopping center and suddenly turned toward him in the wrong lane. So pulls out, driving in oncoming traffic right into this vehicle. Mm-hmm. Knutson swerved across the center line into the path of an oncoming vehicle. Now, the important thing to note, like you said, this is not a phantom vehicle case. Knutson was able to identify the other driver, the driver that pulled out in front of him. And so that driver is identified in the court case.
Okay.
So Knutson swerves across the center line into the path of an oncoming vehicle. He collides with that vehicle, and so that vehicle's driver sues him. The court found that Knutson's actions would have been negligent absent a sudden emergency. You cannot just swerve into oncoming traffic. However, because the other vehicle had pulled out in front of him, that other vehicle had created a sudden emergency, Knutson was required to take a reflexive action. There was no time to react. And the Supreme Court of Arizona found that this warranted a sudden emergency instruction. Contrast that. You knew this was coming. Contrast that with a Mississippi case that where the Mississippi court found that the defendant in that case was also faced with an oncoming car in his lane of travel. So this is another, there's a car left of center coming right into your lane of travel. That defendant swerved to his right and went off the shoulder of the road. After the car passed him, the defendant swerved back to his left to get back onto the road. And when he hits the different road surface, so he'd gone off the road into like a grassy area. Mm-hmm. When he hit the road surface, he lost control of his car and got into a collision. So the other driver sues him. The Mississippi Supreme Court held that the emergency instruction, the sudden emergency instruction in that case, was inappropriate because the sudden emergency was over at the time that the accident occurred. The sudden emergency was the first vehicle that came head-on at the defendant's car. Mm-hmm. When the defendant pulled off the road, then the sudden emergency was done. the defendant then made the choice to come back onto the roadway and caused the accident without the sudden emergency. He could have waited. He could have pulled more slowly. He was in control of that situation without the benefit of the sudden emergency defense. And so, therefore, the Mississippi court found that there should not have been any sudden emergency instruction.
So not to confuse legal doctrines here, but there was sort of a cooling off period between the sudden emergency and the collision.
Right.
He pulls over. He's stopped, you said?
Yes. Well, it doesn't say that he stopped. He may have simply gone off the road and then come back up.
Okay. So he pulls over. He could stop and have a Mountain Dew and just...
he could enjoy a frosty beverage.
Take a deep breath and then proceed back out onto the road when it's safe. And the court is saying that this is not a sudden emergency in that circumstance.
Right, because there was enough time that had passed between when the sudden emergency presented itself and when he took the action that actually caused this collision. And it seems funny, but I actually had a case that was just like this in Kentucky. I had a driver, my insured, was on a two-lane road, and she was stopped with her turn signal activated, waiting for the cars in the other direction to stop so that she could make a left turn. A truck coming up behind her, a pickup truck pulling a boat, was coming up behind her. We argued that he was speeding. It was pretty clear that he was because he didn't notice that she had been stopped there for several seconds with her turn signal on, waiting for the cars to clear. Upon seeing her vehicle there, this truck swerves to the right to avoid her, goes down a grassy embankment, and then comes back up the embankment to come back onto the roadway and T-bones our woman who's sitting there waiting to turn. And his attorney argued, not sudden emergency doctrine, although I could see that happening in light of this Mississippi case. His attorney argued with a straight face that our insured should have gotten out of the way.
Should have gotten out of the way of the lunatic coming at her from the grass.
Right, from not on the roadway. So he
took evasive action and didn't evade anything.
Right. So
he did was mess up some perfectly fine ditch first and then hit the vehicle that he was going to hit anyway.
And had the defendant tried to file a counterclaim or a third-party complaint against our insured, I probably would have made the sudden emergency defense because he created a sudden emergency in that situation. We did win that, but I did have to take it all the way to trial to do it.
Surely he wasn't paying attention, right? Even if he wasn't speeding, he was probably looking down.
He was driving too fast for the conditions of having a truck with a boat behind it, so he's got an increased velocity anyway. He's not going to be able to stop as quickly as normal. He was going faster than
he should
have been.
You got to watch your mass. You need to know what your mass is when you're driving.
You do. Well, and like you said, you have to be paying attention. Because if you've got something that's stopped in the roadway ahead of you, that is not going to constitute a sudden emergency.
No, that happens all the time. People turn left.
Exactly, especially if it's broad daylight.
Yeah. People turn left about as much as they turn right. You never know what they're going to do.
Except for UPS drivers. They have special routes where they don't turn left because they found out that it saves gas for them to only turn right in cities. It's really fascinating.
That is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to rotate the tires all the time? You'd think you'd have more wear on one side than the other.
Oh, that's true. Maybe. I wonder if they factored that into the cost. They must have.
If you know a UPS driver, have them email us.
Email us at
rathbonegroup.com.
That's right.
I have questions.
So many more questions. So we've been talking a lot about the sudden emergency doctrine, but it is important to know that the sudden emergency doctrine is not available in every state. There are certainly states that do accept the sudden emergency doctrine. Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, North Dakota, Rhode Island, Louisiana, and Iowa are all examples of states where the sudden emergency doctrine is applied, is used pretty freely. But there are many states where the courts either heavily disfavor or have outright abolished the sudden emergency doctrine.
And it sounds like it's harsh, but there's actually good reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
The state that I would show as an example is Colorado. Most recently, in 2013, the Colorado Supreme Court declared that they would no longer follow the emergency doctrine because it is confusing and redundant in as much as Colorado uses comparative negligence. So the emergency doctrine is less useful in that circumstance. So in states that use comparative negligence standard, your actions while under the sudden emergency are already going to be taken into account.
Right, because you're looking at, were the driver's actions reasonable under the circumstances, and the sudden emergency is part of the circumstances.
Yeah, you show the circumstances, and then you show whether or not you acted as a reasonably prudent person would under those circumstances.
So the other thing that the courts are concerned about is that these instructions will confuse the jury, because they feel that a sudden emergency jury instruction is going to indicate to the jury that the sudden emergency is somehow more important than the other factors in the case, and that it somehow changes the standard of care. And these courts point out that the standard of care remains the same. You need to exercise ordinary care, that care which a reasonably prudent person would use in the conduct of the person's own affairs. That's not going to change whether it's a sudden emergency or not. So in states like Colorado, which is the most recent to abolish sudden emergency, but also New Mexico, Hawaii, Montana, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas, Nebraska, Mississippi, and Arizona, you do not have such access to the sudden emergency doctrine. But you may have noticed right there that I listed Mississippi and Arizona, both of which are cases that I cited earlier as applying the sudden emergency doctrine. And that's because these are states where the courts have determined that the sudden emergency doctrine is discouraged. So in Arizona, the courts have discouraged the use of the sudden emergency instruction. Mississippi, you noticed in the earlier case, refused to apply the sudden emergency doctrine, and that's because Mississippi has abolished it outright. But in Arizona, the courts simply discouraged the use of the sudden emergency instruction. They say that it's but a factor to be considered in determining whether reasonable care was exercised or not. It is subsumed within the general concept of negligence, and it's a matter of argument rather than a principle of law. And you can see this playing out in many of these jurisdictions. Nebraska says the same thing. Their Supreme Court says sudden emergency is something for counsel to argue. It is not a matter for the court to give a jury instruction on. And Kentucky actually has really done a deep dive into the sudden emergency doctrine and how it plays with comparative negligence. Because up until 1984, Kentucky was a contributory negligence state. And in 1984, Kentucky decided to adopt comparative negligence. So there was a case in 1992 where the Kentucky Court of Appeals found that the sudden emergency doctrine was in violation of the direct proportion to fault concept, the direct proportion of fault being comparative negligence, that each person is responsible or is liable for their own percentage of negligence. And so the court found that the sudden emergency doctrine is in violation of that, because what you're saying is, even though the person is liable to some degree, we're going to instruct the jury that they shouldn't be responsible at all. So they may be liable 10%, but we're going to tell the jury to discount that entirely down to zero. And that was actually the law in Kentucky, that there was no sudden emergency doctrine for 12 years, from 1992 to 2004. And in 2004, the Kentucky Supreme Court came along and overruled that case, the Bass case. And the Kentucky Supreme Court said in 2004 that sudden emergency is a factor in the total fault analysis required by comparative negligence. Because it is one of those factors, it can be instructed to the jury. The sudden emergency instruction, the Supreme Court said, informs the jury how it is to allocate fault and apportion damages when the conduct of the person in question is that of an ordinarily prudent person when faced with an emergency situation. So in other words, you're simply telling the jury to remember that this person was acting under a sudden emergency. And that's really how most of the courts that allow a sudden emergency instruction, even with comparative negligence, will allow it. They say, yes, it's a factor, and you can give an instruction on it, versus the courts that say, yes, it's a factor, and therefore it's redundant, and you can't give an instruction on it. So we've talked about the jurisdictions that do allow sudden emergency instructions and do permit the sudden emergency doctrine to be a defense. We've talked about different sudden emergencies, like animals in the roadway, icy conditions, cars swerving in front of you, medical issues. There have also been sudden emergency cases regarding airplanes suddenly swooping down in front of cars, boulders falling into the roadway. But I think, Steve, you probably found the funniest sudden emergency case.
It's bittersweet, because it's funny in one hand and, chock full of shenanigans. But on the other hand, someone did pass away, unfortunately. So
okay, that's less funny.
This is a New York case. I'm going to say Pelletier versus Lam. It's P-E-L-L-E-T-I-E-R. Looks French.
Pelletier?
I'll leave you to it. That's
sure.
Fine. It's July 2008. Brittany Lam is the defendant. She is 19 at the time, driving from New York from a trip to New Jersey. She has three 19-year-old boy passengers, including Brandon Berman and Jason Pelletier.
Sure.
See, now I'm doing it again. The cars go at 65 miles an hour. It's happy hour at Shenanigans in Berman's mind at this time. He's goofing around. He's got an umbrella inside the car. He's sticking his feet in Lam's face while she's driving. At some point, Berman unties her bathing suit top as she's driving. Apparently, she's driving in a bathing suit top. He unties it as she drove. And she takes her hands off the wheel, I'm assuming out of instinct, to try to cover herself. The car goes off the road, hits a guardrail, flips multiple times in the air, crosses over into southbound lanes, and crashes upside down on its roof in the middle of traffic.
Oh, my gosh.
Horrendous accident
that horrendous.
Happened because of this passenger. Everyone inside sustains injuries, of course. Berman, the one who caused all the problems, was the one who passed away. So he's not going to be around to hold liable for this. So one of the other passengers, Jason, here it is again, Pelletier, his injuries actually delay his football career at Yale. So he sues the driver, Brittany Lam, for the accident. His argument was that she should have pulled over to cover herself after the bikini came untied, rather than take her hands off the wheel. However, the court allowed the sudden emergency defense, mm-hmm. and the jury finds her not liable. And this was upheld on appeal. It went all the way to the New York Appellate Court, and they held that not only was the jury instruction for sudden emergency appropriate, but they were not going to disturb the jury's verdict, that this was how an ordinary prudent person could have behaved under the circumstances, and it was not negligent.
Right, because again, this is not really a question of law. Like, this is a question of fact, whether or not something constitutes a sudden emergency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I will say, as a woman, the idea of being in a car full of 19-year-old boys without a top on does sound like a sudden emergency to me as well. And I could mm-hmm. see how her reaction to that may have been outsized and, you know, and huge, trying to figure out what to do. She didn't feel like she had an option.
Do you have a chance to figure out what to do?
Right.
Or is it just an...
It's instinct.
Yeah, like a automatic response.
Right, right.
And in this case, an unfortunate automatic response that causes, you know, this horrible accident. But I thought this case was interesting in as much as the facts pattern doesn't follow the general path that we've seen before as far as people losing consciousness or having a heart attack or a seizure or something like that, or a, you know, animal or pedestrian running out in front of a vehicle.
Well, and it's sort of intentional. The sudden emergency was sort of intentionally caused by the passenger. Now, a 19-year-old boy, does he really realize what his actions, you know, what the result of his actions are going to be in that situation? My guess is he didn't. I'm sure he didn't think that he was going to end up dying as a result of that prank.
No. And you get into all sorts of other weird ethical issues in this case as well, because doesn't the plaintiff here, Pelletier, have some sort of duty to calm down his other passengers when you're driving down the road? I mean, if not for any other reason than self-preservation, you can't have a guy putting his feet in the driver's face while you're driving, and you're a passenger, too.
So did he bear some sort of contributory negligence or comparative negligence under the circumstances? That's an interesting question.
And I don't think, you know, anybody addressed this in the case that I read, but it's interesting. But try to calm yourselves down, teenagers, please.
That's just solid advice.
Yeah, that's just, lay off the Mountain Dew.
Let's talk about a couple other teenagers that we'll recall, our good friend Steve and his friend Nate driving along. So does Nate's spider incident constitute a sudden emergency that would absolve him of liability?
On the basis of the bikini case, I think that should we have gotten into an accident, I think I would have argued hard for that defense, and I believe you could it's conceivable you could find a jury that would go along with you there.
I think that if you're in a pro-sudden emergency doctrine jurisdiction in that circumstance, and you were in Ohio, right?
Yep.
I think that you could have gotten a sudden emergency instruction, and yeah, it would have been up to the jury to determine. It just depends on whether you have 9 or 12 arachnophobes or or reasonable people.
So there's folks like you who will pick up the spider and, like, you know, gently caress it as you walk it out the door and say, here you go, spider, you're free.
Spiders are very useful. You should be nice to them.
I'm sure they're fine. But you have folks like my friend Nate who, you know, clearly was not prepared to handle the spider on his leg as he's driving, and it caused a lot of involuntary spasming.
And you can see how the makeup of the finder of fact in these cases is so important, whether it be the spider case or the bikini top case. You mm-hmm. know, if you've got a jury full of people who don't see, you know, if you have a jury full of nudists, maybe they don't see that as a sudden emergency. And I'm being serious, because it's all going to depend on what the finders of fact consider to be what an ordinary prudent person would think.
Prudent.
Well, I think that that's all that we have today on the sudden emergency doctrine. If you would like more information on this topic, or if you'd like to suggest a future topic or refer a file, please email us at podcast@rathbonegroup.com.
And visit our website, www.rathbonegroup.com. And make sure to subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'd like to give a special thank you to Ralph DiSilvestro for composing and performing our intro and outro music, and ask you to join us again soon on Subrogation.